Hello and welcome to the Crisis Point Podcast. I'm Eric Sammons, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. I just want to remind everybody to please like and subscribe to this channel wherever you might listen to or watch it. Also, be sure to check out crisismagazine.com where we have a couple articles every single day on the crisis in the church and in the world and how we can survive it and how we can thrive in it as well. And also follow us on all the different social media. If you're still on Twitter and Facebook, we're still there for now. Otherwise, we're also on MeWe, we're on Gab and Telegram. And so, you know, whoever doesn't kick us off will be on there until they do. So, okay, so let's go ahead and jump in. We're going to be talking about divorce today, which has become somewhat of a third rail in Catholicism, unfortunately. Is it third? Yeah, third rail. Let's say fifth rail, but no, that's fifth wheel, third rail. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, we have Layla Miller. That's correct pronunciation, right, Layla?
It is, yep.
Yeah. Because we had, isn't Lila
Lawler?
My friend
Lila Lawler is.
Yes, we had Lila on. Now we have Layla on. So.
Right. Yeah, spelled the same.
That's right. Exactly. So anyway, Layla Miller is a Catholic writer and author whose passion is in church teaching on marriage, family, human sexuality, and other moral issues. She's published four books, Primal Loss, The Now Adult Children of Divorce Speak, Raising Chaste Catholic Men, Practical Advice, Mom to Mom, Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, which she co-authored with Trent Horn, and her latest, which is Impossible Marriages Redeemed. They Didn't End the Story in the Middle. Welcome to the program, Layla.
Thank you, Eric. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah. So first of all, I just want to ask a little bit about yourself. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you are a revert to Catholicism. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about how you came back to the practice of the Catholic faith?
Sure. So my story is pretty much the same as every other Generation X Catholic in America, which is that I was raised Catholic. We went to Mass every single Sunday. I did CCD once a week. I was a public school kid, K through 12. Basically, that left me uncatechized. So I grew up in the 70s and 80s, uncatechized, although, you know, going through every motion as far as, you know, again, church going and CCD. So by the time I hit late high school and into college, and I went to Boston College, which is a Jesuit university. So
not a Catholic university again.
Right. I mean, everybody there who came in even slightly Catholic left like a Buddhist or something. I mean, it was ridiculous. And this was even, you know, in the late 80s. But didn't really know my faith, but really felt like I was a devout Catholic. Meantime, I had married an agnostic Jew. And we did get married in the church, and we did. I baptized the three babies we thought we were just gonna have maybe two or three, and that was it. And of course, you know, he would get sterilized and the whole bit, just living the secular life. I pretty much kind of stopped going to Mass except around my parents, that type of thing. And then, long story short, I had a friend who had been a radical feminist and Episcopalian originally, and she found a Bible church nearby. We were stay-at-home moms by that point, and we were writing a newspaper column for our local Phoenix paper. And so she's like, you won't believe the stuff I'm hearing at this Bible church. So I thought, oh, that sounds really great, better than kind of this, because I was not a liberal. I'm like, it's better than the stuff I'm hearing at this Catholic church. No, so even though I'm Catholic, I'd like to go to church. So I told my mom about that. And she said words that changed lots of lives. She just told me that night, she said, as she's a convert herself, she said, find out what you're leaving before you leave it. And then she followed up by giving me a book 2 weeks later of apologetics, which was Carl Keating's Catholicism Fundamentalism. And that did for me. I'm someone who, you know, things to make sense. And that was the first time I'd seen anything that put historical, biblical, reasonable arguments together for the Catholic faith on a number of topics. So I just was on fire ever since then. And it was about 25, 26 years ago. So
yeah, still
here.
We're about the same age, because I grew up Protestant, but I also read Catholicism Fundamentalism in the early 90s. And it was I thank Carl Keating to this day for writing that and the great work he did. He's done at Catholic Answers. And my goodness, that book changed. I mean, that book and then Scott Hahn's tape were the two ones for me. And yes. and just like you, then it was just like, you know, off to the races at that point. So that's great. I mean, thank you, Carl Keating.
Absolutely. And my husband is very Catholic now too. So we're, yeah.
Oh, that's so great. Is my friend. Good, good. So, I mean, that's just, if you think about it, though, this is off topic, but I'm just thinking about how much, you know, something like Carl Keating's book has affected so many people, because not just you, but like you said, you know, your whole family, you know, generationally now. And then my family, of course, I would have just had a Protestant family, and now I have a Catholic family with seven kids. I probably wouldn't have had seven kids if not for that. So, I mean, it's amazing how God can work through that. So yes. Today, though, what I want us to discuss is the topic of divorce. You've written about divorce in you know, a couple of your books, actually. And I know you've done a lot of writing online as well, a lot of work to try to combat divorce. And I feel like divorce is something, we talk a lot, the church talks a lot about abortion and against it, which is great. We ignore birth control, but we do, you know, we do talk even about homosexuality, although a lot of it's muddled and messed up. But I feel like we never talk about divorce ever. I mean, how often do you ever hear a homily about it? How often do you ever even talk about it among Catholic people? So what got you interested then in writing about divorce and talking about it?
Yeah. And what you said is true, because you say you don't hear anything about it. I've heard one homily in my 54 years of being a Catholic. And it wasn't until I was 50 years old that I heard a homily about divorce and the effects and the evils of divorce. And that was from my bishop, Bishop Thomas Olmsted. Only time. So what got me interested, I had been teaching family, you know, things on the family and church teaching on marriage and human sexuality and morality in general for many years, a couple of decades probably. And of course I was against divorce. I mean, everybody's against divorce. And I like to say, you know, we're against divorce in theory, but not in practice. So even though I would say, oh yeah, divorce is bad, you know, maybe in passing, I mean, it never was a topic. I really don't know that I ever really felt that in cases where someone I knew, someone, you know, whose sad story I heard, I didn't try to talk them out of divorce. I didn't take a hard line. I kind of thought, well, you know, your marriage probably isn't valid anyway, you know, because that's what we say kind of behind the scenes is like, oh, it's probably not valid. So really, I didn't think about it much. And when I did think about it, when I had hurting friends and hurting, you know, people who were in suffering, you know, suffering in marriages, I never thought about the kids, you know, because it's always like, well, you know, the kids will kind of go along with whatever and it's just life. So, but I have a group of friends who are maybe four or five of us who talk a lot, and Catholic, all of them very devout Catholics, have good families, good marriages. One of them is a child of divorce and never really thought much about it, but then started to realize, well, sometimes when she talks about certain things in her life, it seems to be connected back to her parents' divorce when she was six. Now here she's 40. And so she would say these things, and there were complications and stresses and just burdens that she carried that I'd never even thought about to this day, like with step parents and other grandchildren that aren't, you know, related to her dad, who's now, you know, and her mom had boyfriends and I don't know, all these things. And I thought, well, why don't you write about that? That sounds really stressful, but I don't think we know a lot about that. At least people like me, who's from an intact family and who has never been part of a divorce. And she said, yeah, I might do that. And anyway, she never did. And I understand now why. It's very hard for the children of divorce to do anything on this topic. But so I thought, well, I'm going to just ask some questions of people, because that's, I don't know. I think it was the Holy Spirit, honestly. But I went on my social media platforms and I said, if anyone's an adult child of divorce and wants to answer some questions I have, I would love to hear from you. It would be anonymous. And so that's how it started. I just off the top of my head made up 8 questions, and the ones who could emotionally write down the answers did that for me, because a lot of them couldn't. I had like 100 or so people within the first day or two saying, I'll answer your questions. But only about 70 came back with the actual written responses. And I just couldn't believe it. I call it an avalanche of pain. I just never expected anything like that. And it all was very, very similar. It didn't matter if they were from an abusive, terrible situation. It didn't matter if they were men or women, if they were Catholic, non-Catholic at the time, if they were young or old when the divorce happened. It didn't matter. They almost, to a man, said the same stuff. So that's what happened. And from then on, I can't really let it go now, knowing what I know.
So what are some common threads of what the adult children of divorce said about their experience? Like, what kind of tied them together?
So the trauma of it, and a lot of people don't understand the trauma or tie it to their parents' divorce for even decades afterwards. So that's important to know. Like, younger people, teens and young adults, they might not say that the trauma or the stress or the anxiety or the loneliness or the acting out or the self-harm or the inability to have a relationship last, they won't connect it necessarily to their parents' divorce when they're still young, because they're still spewing the narrative, which is parents have a right to be happy. You're happy when your parents are happy. Children are resilient. So they believe that. They go along with it because what are they going to do? These are the people that, when you're young, I mean, your life depends on who you love, your parents. So you're going to, okay, I trust, I believe. And then later on, people, as they mature and get into their own marriages and such, they start to realize, oh, I think this is connected to the literal, you know, destruction of my family, my foundation. So a lot of them, lack of identity. I mean, identity just out the window once your family is dismantled and shattered. Isolation, loneliness, lack of trust, anger. Like in boys, you know, there's a lot of anger. They don't know what to do with their emotions of grief, so it becomes anger. Women, they're acting out sexually, you know, looking for love and acceptance, cutting. This inability necessarily to keep your own relationships together, because all you've learned is that conflict leads to permanent separation. So if there's a conflict, you bail, or you expect the other person to bail, or you self-sabotage, or so many different things that happen. Perfectionism. There's also this idea that you're two people. You're one person with one part of the family, your dad's side, and you're another person completely with your mom's side, and you can't integrate the two. You don't even know who you are. Lots and lots of stuff like that. Suicidal ideation. I mean, there's just so much that goes on interiorly, and they don't quite know how to connect it all or make it better. And another big thing with the children of divorce is they don't know how to deal respectfully with their parents. Because a lot of them, you know, especially the Catholics, you want to honor your parents, and the fourth commandment is really important and all that, but they don't know how to do that, because the very people they're supposed to honor are the ones who caused them the greatest pain and the greatest injustice, the greatest wound they will ever have. So there's just a lot. It's very complicated. Yeah. And we have millions of walking wounded all around us, and we just don't recognize it.
Yeah. I hate that phrase in that context, the children are resilient. No. I mean, yes, they are, because God made them that, but it's used as an excuse to do something to them. Terrible. It's okay. They'll be fine. But so we're going to do this terrible thing to them. It's like, children are resilient if like a tornado hits the house and they lose all their possessions. They're resilient, more resilient than we are about stuff like that. But when you harm them through your actions, you know, it's like an excuse, like, oh, they're resilient, they can handle it. I mean, I hate that phrase.
it's a cover. It's a cover for the adults doing what they want to do. And right. One of the questions of the 8 questions that I asked in the book was, what do you want to say to people who say that children are resilient? I can tell you that chapter was the one where I had to put the most bleeped out words and asterisks, you know, in, because the emotion and the anger when that phrase was presented to them, they wanted to swear. I mean, they wanted to curse. Just it's funny. Some of them say what you did, which is, yes, children are resilient, but that means they're, if they're in a war-torn nation, right. Yeah, they might lose a limb. But you don't do that to them on purpose.
Right.
And then other people would say, no, children are not resilient. You know, but basically the intent or the sentiment was the same, which is right. That's a bad, bad excuse. It's a bad thing to say.
Yeah. Now, before we talk, I want to talk in a little bit about how the Catholic Church is handling divorce and how we deal with it. But let's talk a little bit more about the children of divorce. To my knowledge, I don't know, and I worked for a diocese for 5 years, so I kind of am aware of this stuff. I don't know of any real like apostolate or ministry in the church that is directed towards children of divorce. Is there anything like that?
So you've hit on another one of my pet peeves. I've discovered that the children of divorce are unseen, unheard. We don't want to hear from them, first of all. It's very uncomfortable considering how we facilitate divorce often and remarriage often. I mean, it's we don't want to hear from them. So when there have been programs, and I know of a few of them in the past, in my opinion, those programs amount to the gaslighting of children. It's things like, oh, yes, we know that your family has changed. You know, love is still there. It's just changed. It's just a different kind of love and a different way. And it's very gaslighting to the child because it makes the child feel crazy. They know something really wrong happened. Their life has been devastated. Their foundation is gone. They feel all these terrible things inside that they, depending on their age, they can't even put a name to. And all the adults in their lives are saying, it's totally fine. You know, love is still there. It's the same. It's just a little configured a little differently. And so I consider that to be gaslighting because they're not saying what was done to you was wrong. It was an injustice. It's not how God designed it. You have a right to your intact family. God gave you a natural right to your intact family. And either one or both, not always both, but either one or both of your parents has sinned in such a way that foster your family. So if you can say that first, it helps the child get some footing like, okay, that I can get behind because that's true. You know, that's true. There's an injustice. And then you can go from there and try to heal the child in many different ways, but there hasn't been anything like that. Now recently, and these are not diocesan programs necessarily, but recently, even since I've written the book, which was, I think it's going on 4.5 years now, two new apostolates have popped up that I trust. And that's saying a lot. And those are restoredministry.com. And that was founded by Joey Poncharelli. He himself is a young married man who is a child of divorce. And that is a really well done apostolate for teens and young adults for separation and divorce. Absolutely recommended. And he's recently written a little book that I can't wait till it gets out there. It's just been released. And I don't even remember the name. It's that new. But so restoredministry.com is excellent. And then for all adult children of divorce, lifegivingwounds.org is Dan Miola and his wife Bethany. And he also is a child of divorce. And he fashioned an entire retreat that is so profoundly spiritual and so good that I can put my stamp of approval on it. I love lifegivingwounds.org also. So those are two that are new and they're out there and they don't gaslight the children of divorce. And I'm so thrilled they're there because before those two, I just don't even know that there was anything at all.
Yeah, and I'll put links to those in the show notes. That's good to hear that there are a few things out there. And you're talking about the gaslighting. It's so true because the child has to somehow reconcile their damaged relationship with their parents. Well, how can they do that if, like, you're basically telling them it's not damaged? I mean, because that's essentially what you're doing. You're saying, oh, the love has just changed. You're acting like the parents didn't do anything to the kid, but they did do something to the kid. And like you said, it might be, usually it's both are involved in some level. Sometimes it's only one, just depends on the situation. But no matter what, the kid was harmed and wronged, and there needs to be acknowledgement of that before you can then heal it. But it sounds like if you just say, well, it's love has changed, whatever, it's like that just pushes it down and like ignores the real wound there. Now, I'm going to ask a question that I'm putting you on the spot here, but I know you're a mother, I'm a father. We have children who are older and, you know, they start dating and things like that. Now, my family, I'm so blessed because both my parents and my wife's parents, you know, they were married their entire lives, you know, to each other until death. And so it's been a great witness for them. What would you say, though, if one of your kids started dating somebody who was a child of divorce? Because it obviously has an impact on that person's ability to have a relationship. Yet at the same time, it's not like we want to treat them as lepers that you can't, you know, that they can't have a relationship. But how would you deal with that if one of your children came to you and started dating somebody who was a child of divorce?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And in fact, I've taken that question to some of the contributors to my book because they know that that stigma is out there. They're all these children of divorce and they know that there's a risk when someone married them, you know, and it's a really hard topic to talk about because these are some of the greatest people, but they'll even say, we don't know what we would do if our kids had that dilemma because we know how damaged we are and we have been. So what I would do personally, is if that were the case, and again, my baseline for everything with dating is the person you're dating a devout Catholic? Because right there, that's our baseline. You know, date a Catholic. Don't date someone else because it's too tricky. But if that seemed like it was getting serious, and okay, again, I can only speak for myself, and because I've done this work, I would go to the person they're dating, and I would have this conversation with that person. I would first want to make sure that person understood the wounds that they're bringing into the marriage and try to help that person heal to at least a good degree before being okay thinking that everything's going to be fine. Because there are things that are just maybe blind spots. They need to understand that this may be a wound that they're bringing in from their family of origin, and that has to be rectified in some way or acknowledged before they're going to come in and you know, hopefully marry someone else and then risk another disaster, another broken family. So I would hope that parents could be close enough to really sit down with maybe their own child and the love interest and talk about those effects. I mean, it's not something that should be ignored, I don't think, because you are asking for a high risk, much higher risk of divorce in that situation. So,
right. Yeah. And it's nice that there's actually now a couple of ministries possibly that you can, point them to help them if they, you know, because usually, like you said, they're not acknowledging it when they're younger. And so that's when they're starting to get married, when they're maybe 23, 25, something like that, they might not have real, and maybe the parents got divorced when they were teenagers, they might not have really processed that yet. I'm not sure what the right word is, but, you know, basically understood how it's impacted them as well as like somebody who's a little bit older. So I'm glad to hear you're asking people who are actually children of divorce, because they're the best ones to tell us, like, okay, what are the struggles, the unique struggles of getting married if you're a child of divorce?
Right. And if I could just throw this in too, in the past, it wouldn't matter as much in decades past whether someone came from a divorced home. It wouldn't matter as because the entire culture was pro-marriage, staying together, and there was no-fault divorce. So if those tricky times came, the first exit, you know, wouldn't be open and greased, you know, to get out. And then there weren't like, I don't know, tens of thousands of annulments a year that backed up the no-fault divorce. So there was a cultural pressure, a good pressure, to stay married no matter what. And so you'd be almost forced to work out these issues because you weren't going anywhere. Right. So now is when we have a worse problem because you know that if those things get triggered in someone, they could just bolt. They may not even want to. A lot of these children of divorce are so adamant that they're not going to do to their children what was done to them. But again, if you don't have the tools to know and understand how to not leave or not to have someone, you know, push them out or whatever, you're going to be behind the eight ball. It's it's so tricky, and you don't have the culture to back you up in any way. And you don't even have families to back you up anymore, because most families will take the side of whoever is suffering. You know, oh, I just, you know, this is terrible. Oh, you got to get out of there. You need to be happy. So every force is against a marriage to begin with, even in the best situations. So this is just another thing to consider and say, okay, how can we shore this up before the marriage happens, and then support it once they're married.
Okay. So I want to talk a little bit now about the Catholic Church. And the fact is, in our society, I believe the Catholic Church is the only institution that, at least on the books, truly opposes divorce. I mean, every other institution, I mean, Protestant denominations, even the Orthodox Churches allow divorce in certain situations, in certain cases. You know, it doesn't matter who it is. Everybody basically accepts divorce officially, but the Catholic Church never has and never will officially accept it yet. That's the good news, that, you know, we haven't caved on that. But the bad news is, if you look at the statistics, and I'm sure you know this, of course, divorces is as common among Catholics as it is among any demographic group. I mean, I was looking just this morning at this, and it seems like we're really no different as far as how often Catholics divorce. I mean, evangelical Protestants were surprisingly high. But other than that, it was like, you know, we're just like that. Why is it that Catholics clearly, at least in practice, are divorcing at essentially the same rate as everybody else, even though we're supposed to be against divorce?
Right, because as you said, textually, in the texts of everything, it's ironclad. We're good. You know, people are shocked that in the catechism, it literally says divorce is immoral. Okay, it doesn't say it's immoral only if you remarry without annulment. You know, it just says, it doesn't have that caveat. It says that if you remarry without annulment, you know, if you remarry, that adds to the gravity of what happened, of the rupture. And it says things like divorce is a grave offense against the natural law. Okay, that means a grave sin. You know, so we don't even believe, if I put something out there on Facebook, for example, that even touches on the idea of divorce is a sin, everybody jumps. You know, divorce is not a sin. Divorce is not a sin. The Catholic Church does not teach divorce is a sin. It is such, it's a lack of catechesis on a scale that includes the clergy, you know, includes priests. Nobody knows that divorce is a sin. I mean, one of the best dioceses out there, not mine, but another diocese, I think it's Lincoln Diocese. I want to say there's a Q&A on annulments. And I just saw this the other day about going up for communion. And if you're divorced, and it's partly correct, it says, you know, just because you're divorced doesn't mean you can't go up for communion. What it doesn't say is that, but if you're the abandoner, if you're the one who broke the family and you unjustly ripped this family to shreds, you abandon your spouse, which, by the way, the catechism talks about the abandoned spouse is a terrible thing. And, you know, now your children, the catechism talks about, have trauma, and it's contagious in societies. And again, read the catechism on this. It doesn't say then you're in mortal sin and you can't go up to communion. If you have destroyed your family, you are not in a state of grace and you cannot receive communion. So we're not getting it from anywhere. Nobody is teaching that this is a sin. And if you're the guilty party who did this thing, it doesn't matter if you stay single. It doesn't matter if you're not remarried. You've still done a grave offense against the natural law, against God, against family, against your family members. You're not free to go up to communion until you've gone to a sacramental confession and rectified your sin. So why aren't we teaching that? Like, everybody taught that before, you know, Vatican II. Everybody taught that. You should see the things that Fulton Sheen says, you know, about there's a video called Marriage Problems. I think that's what it's called. YouTube. I think it's on Sensus Fidelium. You could go through that whole hour of what he's saying, and he never once says anything like what we hear now, which is, well, you know, if you're really suffering and if you're really upset, you can go on and get divorced and then get your annulment and everything's going to be fine and go up to communion. And this is all new, and it's all just, I have to say, it's either unbelief or it's either it's bad will or it's people who are of good will, but are so poorly catechized, whether it's in seminary or, you know, just us lay people, that they have no clue what the church actually teaches on this, except some vague notion that we don't like divorce, but it's okay if you have to do it.
And I think in practice, you know, you have your situations, your extreme situations in which one person is truly solely at fault. I'm thinking of the husband who abuses his wife, or just abandons his wife for, his secretary or something like that. But it seems, at least anecdotally to me, that most divorces, it's both parties are involved in the decision to divorce, that both parties grew estranged, did not do certain things they probably needed to do to make the marriage work. This isn't always, but it does seem like this is when the people I know who've been divorced, that's usually the case. And so in those situations, it's still a sin for both parties. You know, right? That's what the catechism is saying. If you are part of a divorce in the sense that you didn't fight against it, you didn't take the necessary steps to stop it, then you're committing a sin. Now, you know, the level of the sin and all that's between God and you and your confessor, and you know, figure out you need to go to confession no matter what, but how grave it is obviously depends on how much you participated in it and things like that. But I think that's just completely ignored because it's always a case of like, it just didn't work out. And
yes. Know. So there's most divorces are low conflict divorces. They're not a woman being savagely beaten. They're not a true psychopathology where someone is just a psychopath. And in those cases, I mean, we can get into that too. And in those cases, the church has always said, and the church says in modern canon law, that physical separation is permitted in case of grave moral or physical danger or an unrepentant adultery. You can physically separate, always with the caveat that if that goes away, those issues go away and you work it out, that you come back together as a couple. What we have never heard of, we've always heard that things like, well, civil divorce is not really a thing, which is true in the sense that it's not, we don't recognize that a civil divorce does anything to touch a marriage. I mean, a marriage is a marriage. If a marriage is valid, and canon law, by the way, says that we're to presume the validity of a marriage, then yeah, okay, in that sense, civil divorce doesn't mean anything to God. But what we haven't figured out yet is that to even approach for, this is what people generally do, and this is why it's complicated in America. The church in America requires a civil divorce before looking at anything in a tribunal. So if someone gets in their mind, and everybody gets in their mind when they start having trouble, I'm sure I could get an annulment. I don't think, you know, that this was a real marriage. You know, there's all these things that I think now were wrong. Well, to test that theory, you first have to go in America. The church requires you to go do something that is, here's the irony, that is actually sinful, which is to go approach the civil courts. You can approach the civil courts. There is a caveat in, again, canon law and everything. You can approach the civil courts. This is in the catechism. If there are certain legal protections that you can't get elsewhere, okay? And that would be very, very specific legal protections. Most people, and you can never go there thinking you're ending a marriage. You're only going to get, I like to call it, it's too bad it's called civil divorce. I wish it were called a defensive legal maneuver just for some protections. But it's called civil divorce, okay? I hate that we use that word, divorce, because it doesn't touch a marriage. So, but people, Catholics go so that they can go get their annulment later. They go to civil divorce because their priest says you got to get a divorce, you know, you're suffering enough or whatever, you're unhappy, and then you can go to the tribunal. But, and I had this vetted, I had this article for Catholic Answers vetted by a tribunal judge just to make sure that I'm not wrong on this. It says in the catechism and canon law, all of this, you can't, but for those very narrow circumstances, ever even approach the civil courts. So if you're not in danger, if you don't need protections, you can't go to divorce court. So even going to divorce court is itself a mortal sin, okay? You'll never hear anybody saying that.
right.
that don't do it, don't do it. Don't even do it to try to test whether or not you have a, you know, an annullable marriage. Because most Catholics, and I don't know if you know anyone who's actually gone to, I know one person who's done it the right way, who's gone to get those legal protections that she needed because her husband was a drug addicted, abusive, draining their bank account, you know, all sorts of different things. She had to get legal protections. She never, ever did that with the intent to divorce and move on. She did that to get protections financially and otherwise physically, and then hopefully to save her marriage at some point down the line. Wow. Most Catholics go to civil divorce court with the intent to end the marriage. That's what they're trying to do. I'm ending this marriage and then I'm going to move on. That is immoral. There's no such thing. And the church even says in the catechism, divorce is the attempt to end the contract by which, you know, the two parties come together to live together as husband and wife for life. It never actually can happen in an indissoluble sacramental marriage. And it's not supposed to happen even in a natural non-sacramental marriage of non-baptized persons.
Right.
So we're not taught any of this at all. We're just taught, well, gosh, it seems like you're suffering a lot. And then you get permission by a lot of priests even to go ahead and divorce. I'm right. shocked at the number of priests, even good priests, who tell, especially women, because that's usually who's now leaving, you know, go ahead, you can go get divorced and then take it to the tribunal.
Yeah, so a couple that's separated, let's say, but they're not divorced civilly, and then they and then the woman's thinking I might want, or the wife or the husband, doesn't matter, but the wife thinks, okay, I think I want to look into an annulment. She's essentially told by the church, well, go get divorced.
Yes.
And then we'll talk to you about the annulment.
Yeah. It's required.
Yeah.
It's required, and this is why it's so backwards, and people have said it's backwards. A lot of people don't agree with this, because how can you require something that is a sin?
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. And there's all sorts of reasoning why it has to happen that way. I've never bought into that reasoning at all. It doesn't even make sense to me. It's all backwards. And we have no tools. We're not, as a church, what we should be doing, because we have plenty of diocesan separation and divorce ministries. Plenty of them. Right. There's an entire industry of them.
Yeah.
And they a lot of times end up being a way to meet new people.
I was going to say that's
or a way to hear about how best to go about getting an annulment.
Right. I mean, yeah.
People have said it's like a meat market.
Yeah. I know of people myself who have been, they go to these meetings and then they end up finding somebody else and they end up getting divorced, and because they were separated maybe when they go to this, and maybe they've been separated for a while, yes. but they're not divorced. So, I mean, it's a bad situation, but yes. it's still redeemable. And then they end up going to
these
divorced and separated groups in a Catholic church, and they end up meeting somebody else. And yeah, it's tragic.
And so if you have that many of those types of programs, where are the programs that should be more numerous to help a couple in absolute distress? That right. should be the overriding program we have for marriages in crisis. It shouldn't be about the separation and divorce. It should be about the, how do we get you back to being able to live as a family?
Yeah. I mean, just look at your typical Catholic parish bulletin. A lot of them are going to have an advertisement for a divorced and separated Catholic group or whatever. They're going to have other, you know, their youth group. They're going to have all these other groups, but is there anything that ever even just says, if you're struggling with your marriage, contact this number or go to this website or something like that. Just something basically to say, it's like the assumption is if you're struggling with your marriage, there's only one path you can take, and that's to get divorced.
I have a quick story that still haunts me. I was on Facebook. There's a very popular divorce and separation ministry out there that's used all over the country. And so people run these, and there's lots of graphics and books and programs, and it's all put together in a package. And so one person who ran one of these groups for her parish said, oh my gosh, there's a guy in our parish, and he just this morning, his wife walked out. His wife just left. We are starting our 6-week separation and divorce class starting Thursday. I need to get him into that. And I'm thinking, what? Are you kidding me? Literally, this guy's wife left him this morning. I mean, you could still smell her perfume in the house. Oh my God. She wants to funnel him instantly into the separation and divorce ministry, which is the kind of which that you just spoke of. And I was floored that this was done and that this was part of what they want to do with this program. Because I looked up the program. I'm like, yeah, they want people in there. Anybody who's separated, what are we doing? I mean, it's scary to me.
And it's like, and it like labels him and people in it, like you are divorced, you are separated, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's just, that's a reality. You can't change it anymore.
Yes.
Now, how about like at the beginning? So we're doing a terrible job at when couples are struggling. But I would also argue the fact that there are so many couples, not that every couple doesn't struggle on some level, of course, but we're doing a terrible job of keeping them from those real serious struggles by before they're married. I think every diocese, to my knowledge, has some type of marriage prep program. I was in charge of one for a diocese for a while. But obviously, those aren't working that great. If they were, we'd have a lot better rate of Catholic divorce. The Catholic divorce rate would be a lot lower, I would think. Do you think that as well? And what can we do to improve marriage prep?
Yeah. So that's a big thing that I always get is people say they're on my side here. You know, they're like, this is terrible. What's happened? And they tend to come in with the idea that if only we had better marriage prep, you know, all this would be, a lot of it would go away. I always want to say, I don't agree with that because, and I've done marriage prep too on the training side. I've been trained. We have a really good it's a 9-month, which I think is actually too long, but it's a 9-month program here in Phoenix. And I've been trained in it. My husband and I did engage couples in our home. It's a good program. I mean, it's solid. It's probably one of the best out there for sure. And I'm still seeing people that have come through the program getting divorced a few years later. I'm seeing it. I know that that's not the be all end all. Here's the problem as I see it. You could have the best. And by the way, there was no such thing as marriage prep anytime in the previous, you know, eras of Catholicism, and people tended to stay married. Okay. Right. Obviously that was because society again had more.
Marriage prep was their childhood watching.
Was their childhood. It was watching mom and dad. It was watching the grandparents. It was this remote preparation, right, for marriage, and all of society and even the world put value on lifelong marriage. And so it wasn't really, you know, divorce was scandalous. So, but now, you know, we have this marriage prep and it's designed to teach us what marriage is. And okay, you can have the best marriage prep in the world. And then 5 years in, someone has a breakdown. 10 years in, someone is having a crisis or loses their faith or is going to have an affair. 15 years in, someone picks up an addiction. What are you going to do? You're going to look back to your 15, 20 years ago, and you're going to remember what some person said to you in a weekend conference. You're not going to be thinking about what you learned at the beginning. You already know that. You already know that marriage is supposed to be permanent, but right now you're in a crisis. You are in, you know, we need triage. What's going to happen now? It doesn't matter. I'm sorry. It just doesn't matter that much what happened 5, 10, 15, 20, and 50 years ago. You're having the crisis now. What does the church offer now? And the answer is, of course, nothing. I mean, Retrovi is a good program. People always talk about that, but it's a weekend program. Not everybody's going to get there. It's not diocesan. It's not in the, you know, parishes. It's not well known. I mean, it's just not going to fix everything. And so you have this massive problem where we think we're going to somehow, because we're going to add an extra weekend or a better speech, there's going to be something that's going to shore up that marriage in 15 years when, you know, everything's falling apart and your kid is, you know, maybe died or has an addiction of his own. Or, I mean, there's so many things that happen that put stress points on any marriage. And so the question is, what are Catholics doing to support the marriage? And what we tend to do is we support whoever we feel closest to in the suffering marriage. Like, oh, I'm going to support my girlfriend because she's my friend more than her husband. So, oh, what? He said, what? He's doing what? You don't deserve that. God wouldn't want you to suffer and blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, each family rallies around the family rather than the marriage. I always told my kids, the ones that are married, I'm like, you know, if you ever decide to ditch your marriage, I'm not on your side. I'm not going to be on your side. I don't care what happens. I'm for the marriage. I will always work to save the marriage because number one, you probably have kids and they need it. Number two, this is God's law. I mean, we can't just decide that we're out when it hurts really badly. So, so marriage prep is great, but I would put a lot more resources and energy into what do we do to triage difficult marriages. And it has to be the entire community. It has to be the priests have to know what to do, the deacons, the lay people. There has to be couples who are there to step up and say, we went through this too. Here's why, you know, here's why nobody in this parish or this diocese is going to support your divorce. And you don't hear that at all. So we have a massive problem. And I do link it back to there is no stop on both exit ramps. No fault divorce, you'll get it if you're the guilty party 100% of the time. Doesn't matter. You're out. No one can stop you. And then annulments, pretty much if you're going to go for an annulment, you're pretty much, you may have to do a lot of painful things to get there, but you're pretty much going to get the result you want almost every time. Right. And your spouse, even if your spouse didn't want the divorce, your spouse isn't really going to fight the annulment because we go back to this. Who is going to want to be alone forever, right? We don't like that. We don't want to hear that people have to be alone and keep their vow. And that opens a whole other can of worms, which is standards. You know, people who stand for their vow are supposed to be esteemed in our church. JP2 said that in Familiaris Consortio. He says, you know, these should be the role models. They should be the ones we support. And we do exactly the opposite. We're like, what's wrong with you? You know, he's already moved on. You know, we pat them on the head and they make us feel uncomfortable because they're living a celibate life possibly forever. And we don't like to see that because it might mean that we're required to do something tough one day. And so we encourage them, just see what the church has to say. You know, you could probably remarry. And very few people are strong enough to withstand the idea of keeping your vow till death, no matter what the other spouse chooses to do. Right. And so that's a whole nother can of worms that nobody talks about because we don't encourage that. We encourage the opposite. We want everybody to be happy. And again, we have seen that the children of those who have at least one parent who doesn't remarry, who stands in faithfulness till death, like Christ did with us, those children will be better off. I've seen vocations come out of standards children. I've seen people stay in the faith, whereas usually the kids go, they leave the faith after a divorce. When both parents go off, they remarry, they get on with their lives. Those children are not staying Catholic. It is extremely rare that they would. Right. So that's a whole other topic is standing for the vow.
And we're running out of time here, but one thing we haven't even talked about, but it goes with this whole idea of these, there's no off ramp, no on ramps to stop that, no off ramps to stop it, is that now that we're promoting communion for divorced and remarried, It's like there's really nothing that is stopping it. And I can't imagine how that would impact the children of divorce when the church says, you know, dad who left mom for the younger model, he's okay to receive communion. We're not going to say anything about that. I mean, if I'm a kid, if I'm in my 20s or something like that, and that happens, and I'm Catholic, I can't imagine how that would impact my faith. I would not look at the Catholic Church in high esteem if I saw that happen.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. That's exactly what happens. They can smell the hypocrisy a mile away, and it's worse than just acknowledging. Gosh, that's hypocritical. They're actually the victims again of another injustice. It's like, wait, my parents abandoned my family and now the church is also on board with them. I mean, it, on some level, even if they can't fully articulate it when they're, and some of them can, because they're like, well, this stinks to high heaven. I'm not having anything to do with this institution that says it's okay for my dad to march up there when he's got a girlfriend, or when he is now remarried in the church with the lady who helped to break up my family, or vice versa, the ladies. It goes both ways. But Of course, why would they ever stay in an institution like that? I'd be right. So far gone. It just, if you're not so firmly rooted in the church and you can see beyond all the corruption and damage, a kid's not going to stay. And they don't. And so divorce gets many souls. It gets the souls of the people who decide to blow up the marriage, and it gets the souls of the children, and it gets right. generations. And so the devil loves that. It's an easy way to get the most amount of souls, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is a generational sin in the true sense of the word. Okay, last question is, what can just regular Catholics like us, what can we do to help, I don't know, help slow this down, help prevent it, help people around us we know? I mean, just how can we help this crisis that we have with divorce?
I've been absolutely blown away by how effective just one voice can be in a parish or in a community of friends. Most people are not courageous. They're not going to say something that's going against what everybody else is saying, and they don't want people to suffer and all that. But if you can be one voice that puts the brakes on and says, wait a second, how about we take divorce off the table? I know it's painful to think about, but let's take divorce off the table, at least for a good year or two, and let me find the tools to help you keep your vow, you know, and hopefully reconcile this family. There's nothing that's impossible with God, nothing. I mean, that's why I have the whole second book, which is the follow-up, which is Impossible Marriages Redeemed. Worst case scenarios, and God can redeem them. But you have to be willing to not end the story in the middle. You have to go through the cross. Sometimes the cross is what we need. And so whether there's physical separation that's needed, oftentimes that is necessary. That's okay. But the goal has to be, the devil's not getting our family. The devil's not getting our marriage. And we're going to work the way that, you know, we can have, there are tools we can use. There are people who can help. The Alexander House, by the way, I need to throw that in. The Alexander House is also an amazing, they've saved thousands of Catholic marriages, and they're wonderful. So, but there are places, there are things, there are places and people. So be that one voice that is different from the rest of the voices. And then you'll soon find that other people will join you and join your voice. It is contagious in that way as well. So you got to equip yourself with how bad divorce is and how to help the people who are desperate for your help because nobody else is helping them.
That's great advice. Yep, I think so. And so let's pray for all those who are going through these situations and really pray for courage, it sounds like, because we need to stand up and just not let it be something that just happens around us without us at least trying to save a family, because that's what we're doing. Not saving just a marriage, we're saving a family. And that's the important thing to remember. Okay, well, I think that's it for now. Thanks so much, Layla, for coming on and talking about this. I'll put links in to your books and also these ministries, but especially this Primal Loss, the Now Adult Children of Divorce Speak. I think that's an important book, especially if you are a child of divorce. I would highly recommend that book, or if you know somebody who is, recommend it for them. I just, you know, these are painful things for these kids to go through, and they're not kids anymore, but a lot of pain for them to go through, but you know that we have to help them with that. So thanks a lot, Layla, for coming on.
Thank you, Eric. I appreciate it.
Okay, everybody. Until next time, God love you.